Welcome back, everyone. So for those who are listening for the first time, we are Dylan and Mitch from On The Cast, and we're going to talk about all things lure and fly. So will there be any trolling in there? Will there, Mitch?
There's going to be no trolling, Dil. There's going to be no trolling for the rest of our lives, I presume, because we've made a podcast called On The Cast, and that means it's only casting from here and in. So we've done ourselves a mischief.
Casting. So if you're a troller, come and join our ways, or... Well, I guess, yeah, come join our ways. More the merrier with the old cast. But, yeah, well, any new listeners, you're welcome. And for those who have been here last week and have put up with our voices and our absolute dribble, thank you very much. And we hope you enjoy this one slightly more than last week. That'd be good. And, again, any feedback, let us know. How did we go? We want to know. So, today's episode, Mitch.
Yes.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about one of the fish that is very, very dear to our heart. It goes by many names. The rat of the estuaries, the rat of the sea. What else does it get called?
River carp?
river carp, estuary carp. It is the brim, Dylan. It is the humble, lovely brim. It's the humble brim.
Yes. So today's episode, everyone, is going to be filled with brimmy goodness.
The delicious brimmy goodness called The Brim Files Part 1.
Oh, yeah. So, The Brim Files, what's that you might ask? It's going to be a little bit of a series. The next episode could be next week. Well, it's not. We know that. Secret there. We know it's coming. We'll keep it to us for now. But, yeah, every few weeks we might drop a little Brim Files episode. Might be related to a tactic or a session we've had. Someone who is a bit of a brim god or brim maybe a brim.
Brim goddess too. We don't discriminate.
We don't. We love our ladies here.
That's it.
They're all friends.
They're all friends. Everyone's friends here.
Yes. Well, let's get into it, Mitchell.
All right. So the first thing we're going to get off the ranks is we're going to talk a bit of the science behind the old black brim. Now, we're going with black brim because that's the thing that is closest to our heart and also closest to our waterways. We've caught a few yellowfin brim in our time. But yeah, we're going to talk a bit about the science behind the black brim and how that sort of translates into our fishing on the everyday basis when we're out there going fishing. So Dil knows a bit more about this than I do, so I'll chime in where I can. But yeah, Dil, take it away.
Yes,
mate.
Well, I hope our uni day service correctly here. We have done a bit of the old Google search just to brush up, but the old Cantopagarus butchero, that is what the old southern black brim goes by in the Latin. And pretty much, so for those of you who may not know what a southern black brim is, it is a member of the Sparidae family. Now, we've noticed we've got a couple of listeners over in the US. So for you guys, if you're familiar with fish like sheep's head, that is pretty much our version of a brim. I think yours are a bit more beefier and tougher, and let's face it, a bit more cool than ours, but hey, we love our brim.
And your fish has some real cool stripes, whereas ours literally just like this black, grey goodness. It's not as cool, but it's pretty cool.
Oh, we'll take it.
All right. So, like, what are some of the features of the Sparidae, Dil? What sort of characterizes the old black brim?
All righty. So, if you can draw a little picture in your head, everyone, imagine you've got a deep rounded body, quite a small mouth, not like a tiny little mouth like a whiting or anything, but you'll find it's reasonable. It's not big, it's not a bucket mouth, but it's decent. We'll give it credit there. So pretty much they've got nice, big, strong dorsal spines, as I'm sure everyone who's caught a brim at some time has had a bit of a slip up and had a good spine go under the thumb to the thumbnail, or combination of all three. I think both of us have. And yeah, you'll find they've got quite a stout anal spine, really big and thick, especially if you have a look on, say, the yellowfin brim. The black's anal spine isn't quite as big, but it is pretty brutal if you manage to drop that on yourself. And yeah, they've got really big, firmly attached scales. So they're not quite as large like a tarpon scale or anything like that, but they're quite big and strong and they look pretty cool, especially when they're a big silver fish that's coming from the sea. Or you'll find if you've got one that's up the top of the estuary, they'll go like an almost really goldy color and they look really, really cool. And yeah.
Yeah, a really cool looking fish. I'd hate to be something that eats them because they are full of sharp things all over their bodies. But yeah, they're really cool fish, sort of small mouths and Yeah, I tell you what, like, they're a fish that you just do not want to thumb grip because they are, like, their mouths are strong. They're gonna crush your hooks. They're gonna give you a bit of a nasty time. So, yeah, pretty cool fish.
I did that once.
Yeah, I've done it once as a kid, and it was like a good sized fish, and yeah, it was nasty. So they're pretty powerful little guys. Yeah, they don't grow.
They draw blood.
They do draw blood. They don't grow overly large. Like, what would you say? Like, what would you say the trophy fish is still?
Well, like, benchmarks that 40 centimeters or around that kilo mark, give or take 100 grams. The proper trophy is up around that 50 centimeters, 2 kilo, but they can grow in excess of that. I think, it's about the 60 centimeter mark to about 3 and a bit kilos is the largest one recorded. Very, very rare at that size. I can't say I've ever seen one close to it, but they are out there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So yeah, not like, so that puts into a bit of perspective on the actual size of the fish itself. And they're found generally in upper estuaries when they're spawning. That tends to be around October and November. And it occurs for a number of reasons. Jill, do you want to touch on a bit of that?
Yeah, so you'll find, that October-November period, like, obviously that's a very general sort of time of the year. They can be a month or two either side of that, depending on rainfall. So rain, of course, affects salinity in our estuaries, and that's where our black brim mostly live and breed. So you'll find when they want to get their funk on, as we'll say.
Get their freak on.
They like to look for water. Yeah. Freaky fish. They'll be looking for water in that sort of 11 to 18 parts per thousand. So in terms of an estuary, that is quite fresh. Now, if I remember from uni, I think seawater has a salinity of about 35 to 36 parts per thousand. So that gives you an idea of where they'll be. But it's a great little tool to know that in terms of where to find them. So this, like, moving into this time of year and the next couple of months, you know, the brim is breeding and spawning. They're going to be pushing up our rivers. So I want to be trying to find that much, much fresher water that's going to be up higher. But where that is, every few days, that may move. Or if there's a big flood, that might push it right down to the front. So down in Gippsland, say on the Mitchell River, you might have 5 or 6 kilometres of ideal estuary, and they could be anywhere in that section. You never know. You just got to find where that salinity is. Pretty hard to do unless you want to drop a Weisar or a water quality meter over the edge and have a bit of a look around. But if you find it, you'll find a few fish, I think, Mitch.
Yeah. If you had access to, say, like, do a sort of YSI meter, you'd be on the money. But it is also a lot of effort, and it's super expensive. So you just head up the river, and best bet at that point to find them when they're spawning is just using your sounder, because they clump up in big schools.
You'll see them.
Yeah, you'll see them on the sounder. They'll just be big balls on your sounder, sitting somewhere around the bottom. You won't miss them. You're on the sounder. So if you got yourself a side scan or just a traditional sounder, they're in a bit of water, you'll find them somewhere, that's for sure. And when it comes to, like, when it comes to what they eat, they're predominantly eating crustaceans, mollusks, polychaete worms, small fin fish, basically, so crabs, shrimps, like mussels, little worms, like sandworms, all that sort of stuff, and small fish. That's their predominant diet, unless they live around a metro area, in which case it might be chips, or it might be bread, or it might be
dead bodies, anything.
Yeah, dead
whatever floats down the Yarra, it's on the menu for a few brim.
That's it. So yeah, like we said, brim rats, so they'll eat everything. But they're not very fussy, but it can be difficult to translate that into actual fishing itself. So it does pay to sort of look in the water, look under rocks. If you've got a bait net, they're really good things to put in the area just to see, and you don't have to do it every single time, but they're just good to see what sort of things are, like, around, and try and imitate those things as best as you possibly can.
And even if, say, you go into a new area, like, just go for a walk on the flats or a bit of a reef at low tide, if you're on a tidal estuary, and often you'll see little bits of crushed up bits of shells and everything, and it can give you an idea what they've been eating. But a really cool one, if you're lucky enough to, say, have a boat or a kayak with a live well, like, this is something I learned from a bit of tournament fishing, is whenever you have your brim in the live well for a couple of hours, look in the well after you've taken your fish out and released them for the day, and you'll find there's all sorts of chewed up things. So say when we're fishing the Glenelg or the Hopkins down southwest Victoria, you'll always find there's these purple shell. They love to eat that, and there'll always be tiny little crab legs. But say if you're over Gippsland way, often it'll be, it's like this more white clam, but always you'll find bits and pieces of prawns. Occasionally you'll even find like a whole large prawn thrown up in the live well, all chewed up. And what gives you a bit of a hint what those fish have been throwing on, and can answer a few very valuable questions if you want to pay attention to it.
Yeah, it's kind of gross, but it does go a hell of a long way. Like, especially when you see any fish like spewing up stuff, can't be good for the fish. But I tell you what, it is good for us to know exactly what we're seeing there and how to represent that as best as we possibly can.
Get excited over vomit. It's great sometimes. Gives you all the tips.
and yeah, I guess that sort of touches on a fair bit of the science. How they spawn. Dill knows this more than I do. Do you want to just quickly go over like their spawning behavior and then I guess the average size of the fish before they reach sexual maturity?
So you will find black brim are what we call a broadcast spawner. So pretty much what that means is the males and the females all get in together in a large group and they swim around on the surface or down deep, wherever the salinity is good, like I said earlier, in a certain part of the river. And pretty much what they do is release all the eggs and the sperm into the water column at once, and that all mixes together and fertilizes. So a good-sized female brim can produce about 3 million eggs over the spawning season. And they don't have a gestation period of 9 months like us, believe it or not. They only take 2 to 3 days. So it's a very, very quick process because you can imagine everything else in the estuary wants to eat those little eggs. So once they hatch, they have tiny little pelagic larvae. So larvae that's up in the water column, and then they quickly, quickly go down and they'll settle in, say, anything like seagrass beds or any sort of snotweed or whatever you find in your local estuary or bay or harbour or wherever you might be. And then from there, they'll start to hide, feed up, and grow. So they reach sexual maturity at about 3 to 5 years of age. Now, that obviously will depend on the system and the environmental conditions at the time. And after that, they're ready to go. And with any luck, they can live to be over 30 years old. And as I said earlier, they get to about 60 centimetres, that 3 kilo mark. But a fish of that size is crazy large. And we'll also throw a cool fact in there. Like in Victoria anyway, minimum size is 28 centimetres. And on an average of all the systems in Victoria, it's been calculated that a fish of that size is actually about 9 years old. So quite old image.
Yeah, they are quite a slow growing fish, which is probably one of the main reasons that catch and release fishing is becoming more accepted in them. Obviously, we have all our tournaments and stuff and a lot of lure angling going on for them. And the vast majority of that is people that just like to go out there and catch a few fish and then put them back. But yeah, they are a very slow growing fish. So it does help, especially to keep the genetics there, to put some of those bigger fish away. Even if you do like a feed, it's probably nicer to take some of those smaller fish. And the bigger fish are like a big female breeders. They produce the most eggs. So yeah, if you're going to keep one for a feed, which you're totally allowed within your rights, within Victoria, I think it's 5 or 10 brim. I should know this.
10 at the minute. Yes.
Yeah, 10 at the minute. So I would, it's a lot of fish, but we're not saying don't keep your bag, like take what you need if you want to eat them. But yeah, Dylan and I we're not big old people on the plates for brim. So there's better fish out there, I reckon.
Absolutely. And especially if you consider those, 40 centimeter fish can be 18, 20 years old. Like it's a long time and they've got some pretty cool genetics in that size. So let him grow.
That's it. And as far as the black brim goes, the distribution's pretty broad. Like they're all over the place, really. Like they're nearly in most states. So they're well into WA. So they stretch from Victoria all the way across to WA. So WA, South Australia. They go down into Tasmania, which I think Dill could probably say. Like, and I think it's pretty obvious. Tasmania's like the home of the black brim, really. Maybe it doesn't have the most people to target them, but it certainly is home to probably some of the biggest populations and also like just some monumental size brim.
Big numbers are really big fish, but funnily enough, mostly all on the northern and eastern coast. I don't quote me on it, but I don't think they're on the west side of Tas. I hope I'm wrong there because there's some amazing river systems down there, but yeah, it all seems to be the eastern side, sort of from Hobart all the way up to past Launceston up the north end there. So
if you're from Tasmania and we're wrong, please tell us.
Let us know.
And we will correct this in episode 2 of our Broom File. So, yeah, they're all over the place. And then they obviously go up into New South Wales, but that's when they start mixing in with the population of yellowfin brim. So, but yeah, they're absolutely everywhere. And like in terms of Victoria, because obviously that's where we are, they're most abundant in, like obviously in our estuary. So the biggest one really, Glenelg River, and then the ones that we fish a lot too, so the Hopkins River, and then over in East Gippsland, so all the Gippsland Lakes, so the Mitchell, Bem River, is it Nicholson, like all those places. Mm. And then they're like, but that's not to say that's the only place you can go and catch them, like these distant rivers. There are also a fair few of them getting around in Port Phillip Bay. They're starting to pop up more and more in catches. So they're all over the place.
Yeah, like you'll find a lot of the commercial snapper guys in Port Phillip Bay. Well, it's getting phased out, but they've a lot of the snapper and whiting fishers, when they put their nets, pretty common for them to get a lot of brim. So, and you will find they move between systems a hell of a lot. Like when I've done a bit of spearfishing every now and then, I've taken a few fish even along the coast of Victoria, say 20, 30, 40 kilometres from the nearest estuary. So they move, and they move a lot. Like there's one fish I know of tagged of in, I'm pretty sure it got tagged in Spring Creek. 7 days later, got tagged in Anglesey. Sorry, it didn't get tagged. They got recalled in Anglesey River. Then about a year later, back in Spring Creek again, down at Torquay. So gives you an idea just how much these fish move.
Yeah. Yeah, they're amazing little fish, like especially in years of like high water flow, so high rainfall, sorry, and the rivers are just like bursting open. Like those fish are like the parts of the ocean around those estuaries can be like, yeah, like fresh water and or like low salinity because there's that much fresh water coming down. Those fish get pushed out and then they don't necessarily resettle in that same system. So it could be good at that point to go check like adjacent systems to that estuary if we had good fishing, because sometimes you can find some really cool unpressured fishing in those areas. So
yeah, even in smaller systems that say, like a lot of the smaller systems down in the Otways, they'll go through boom and bust. So you might find for 5 or 6 years they fish like absolute crap, but then there's a good rain, go back the next season and it's just full of really good quality fish, or it's just got fish again. So move around, try systems after a big flood, because brim move, and if there's an open river nearby, they will find their way in it.
Yeah, they'll
be everywhere.
All right, so taking like on to one of our segments, so fisheries news. So news within our fisheries, and some good news sitting around currently regarding our brim. So Dilt.
Yeah, so pretty much there's been a lot of talk about the Gippsland Lakes and what's going on with the fishery and the health of the waterway there. And pretty much their fisheries have opened up their draft plan to the Gippsland Lakes recreational fishery plan, sorry. So you can go onto their website, check that out, have a read. And the best part about it, this is open for everyone to make suggestions on. So you can, if you've got a suggestion off the top of your head, please get on there. Let them know what you think would be great to improve that fishery. So pretty much already in that system, they've removed all the commercial netting. So that's fantastic. They used to be quite a few licensed netters who were putting their nets out at the front of the river mouth and kept, like netting massive quantities of brim, estuary perch, bass, flathead, kingfish, tailor, whatever it was in those lakes coming down. So, and those lakes started to really struggle and they've had a lot of other environmental effects. So it was just getting to a point where the fishery is sort of getting on the verge of looking pretty average. So we're getting a lot of action taking now, whether it's like, say, the removal of the netting, but there's also been some great stockings with estuary perch and bass. They're looking at some other species. They want our input on it. And they've also been putting in a lot more snags. So that's been going on, what would you say, Mitch? Like the last easily 5 years more probably.
Yeah, definitely.
Putting in a lot of man-made snags in there, which are fantastic for the fish, especially the brim and the perch.
Yeah, yeah, it's fantastic news, and I think it was only a couple of years ago that the commercial licenses were bought out. So from 5 years ago to now, the fishery is already starting to look a hell of a lot different to what it used to be, and in the next 20 years, it's gonna be real good. All right, so Dill's pointing down the microphone because I've obviously just blown out one of the next things. All right, and just pointing down. So never mind.
moving on.
Yeah, obviously we're on Zoom, so we're moving on. So that's the news within our fishery. If there's any news that you really would like to, if there's any news that you're interested in, keep yeah, just tell us, let us know. And that's news all around Australia, all around the world. I've missed a couple of things. Sorry, Jill. What have I missed?
That's all right. I'll jump in. So, yeah, pretty much the survey there is open up till the 28th of October. So if you go to www.vfa.gov.au/Gippsland Lakes, you can have a look at the plan there and also just give your suggestions. It was just a quick Survey Monkey thing you can fill out. It took me all of 5 minutes to read everything and reply to it. And the more people that get back to that, everyone, it's fantastic. So please, please do it. If you fish the Gippsland Lakes or if you want to have a say in upcoming like bag limits and size limits, there's a few cool, like they've sort of recommended they might be changing some sort of things there. So I think they want to put the bag limit down to 5 and possibly have a maximum size of 40 centimetres, which I personally think is a really, really good thing for that system. It'll help those fish a lot. And in the next 10 years, we'll start seeing a lot more big fish. So get on there. If you don't like that, let them know. If you like the sound of that, let them know as well.
Perfect. Yep. So if you've got any fishing news across the world, especially across Australia, hit us up. Get in contact. Our details will be in the show notes. So slide into our DMs or if you don't want to do that, slide into our DMs on Insta. So yeah, and that's on the Cast Media. So let us know if there's any fishing news that you want us to either investigate and or like talk about on the show at some point. All right. So that's fishing news.
Easy. So I guess we should really talk about the allure of brim. So you've heard a bit about them, heard a bit of the sciencey facts, but well, we're here to talk about catching them, aren't we, Mitchell?
Ooh, we are definitely here to talk about catching them. The science is interesting to Dylan and I, but the real thing about the science behind it is it helps us figure out where the fish are and what they're eating and how to catch them. And that's the thing about it, is we just want to catch brim. We are here to catch brim. So, the allure of the brim.
What I like about them is they're a very, very widely available species. As anyone who lives in Australia knows, there is a brim near you. If you're living in the coast anyway. So whether you live in the middle of Melbourne or Sydney and you have the cesspooliest, skankiest creek at the back of your house, oogling with weed and algae, you got brim there. So that's a really cool thing. But if you want to go to the most pristine, wildest place, there's also brim there. And if you go to some coastal town on holidays and there's a nice lake system or an estuary, you got brim there too. Brim are everywhere. So
they're rats. They are all over the place, which is awesome because it just provides fishing absolutely everywhere.
You go, Mitch.
Yeah, so like, and they can, and it's like that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be fully, as long as it's connected to salt water. So it could be full fresh water at that time, and there's still going to be brim up in there. Like, generally, like maybe not in your highland rivers, but there's going to be brim, they go a fair way up our rivers. So,
Like, what is it? Like the Merai, we were chatting about it the other day. Like, the Merai down in Warrnambool, you've got a very, very small estuary with quite a large freshwater section all the way up to the weir. And how many brim have you caught there fishing for trout? You're literally like 5 or 6 Ks up from the estuary mouth.
Well and truly five or six Ks.
10 brim in a session.
Yeah.
they love getting up in the freshwater sections of our rivers. And it's funny, not a lot of people target them there, but if it's well connected to the salt, or even if it's got a couple of rapids, they'll get over those. It's pretty funky where they show up and they never cease to amaze me, really.
Yeah, especially if there's a fair bit of salt water pushing in, sometimes it can fill up over those riffles, like riffles and runs and stuff. Yeah, those brim, they push up pretty high. Like I've seen people catching them like in riffles that you would be looking for trout or estuary perch or something, and there's this brim just swimming up it. Like they're not, and like from all variety of sizes. Like I've caught some big brim in the freshwater, and I've seen like probably some of the biggest brim I've ever seen just been swimming around in freshwater. It's crazy.
So fish around that kilo and a half mark while you're fishing for trout, and they'll come up and belt to a parlor or something silly. Like,
yeah,
like, happens a lot more than you anticipate it to.
Yeah, or you're throwing like cicada style lures for estuary perch, and next minute you get a brim, and you're like, that's not what I was after. So they're all over the shop.
Oh, that other cicada. We've seen many a D style detonated by the old bird.
D styles, don't get me started about D styles. D styles will come up in another episode. And like one of the main allures of like the old brim is just like they're adaptable to so many different techniques. So different lures and fly fishing. So that's my digs at the moment is fly fishing. Like they're just so like you can catch them in so many different ways, so many techniques. It's unreal. Yeah,
what it's just that fact when you get bored with one technique, you can swap to the other. Like I always have a few different rods rigged. I have one with a surface, one with a crank, one with a plastic, and it's just like smack a few on one, smack a few on the other. But they're also it's also cool because you can really tune into using that technique on brim. But then the best part about that is you can apply what you learn on those fish to so many other things, even with their behavior, the way they eat a lure, but even just the way you work a lure or that a different style of tackle, whether it's finesse bait casting gear or, as Mitch said, fly tackle, whatever it might be, it's all applicable. And they're one fish I grew up learning on, and I guess that's helped me catch so many things. Like if you know me or Mitch, we fish for everything and anything. Sorry to our bank accounts. It is a horrible addiction I wish I didn't have, but
No, I guess.
That's cool.
I am so happy I've got the fishing addiction. It is expensive and I'm sorry to
trade it for the world.
Sorry to Rena, my girlfriend, again. I'm sorry for spending so much money on fishing stuff, but like I love it and it forms who I am as a person, so never sorry.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah,
but the brim builds out. It's good.
But yeah, the brim is such a good fish to learn on. And like Dill said, like it translates to a lot of different fishing and fish, like that you'll experience, especially in your estuaries and inshore sort of waterways. That like the things that you learn on a brim, like yeah, they just translate across like so well to a bunch of other like varieties and species.
Absolutely.
And they're always catchable. Like you could go to a waterway and you could see fish on the sound and they might not be eating. And you'd be throwing vibes at them. Then you throw on sinking stick minnows, cranker crabs, and you just may not be able to catch them. But that doesn't mean that those fish, maybe they can't be caught. But as long as you might look somewhere else, or you might throw off a angry cast somewhere else and hook a fish in a completely different area. But yeah, there's always a fish in those systems that are catchable to some degree, and you just have to figure out what it is. So yeah, it's just a good fish to refine your tactics on.
Yeah, that's why they're awesome, because it just teaches you as an angler persistence, which is one of the main things in fishing. Like not every day you're going to go out there and smash them once you've found fish, but it will teach you there's always a way to catch them and you're not the best at it. And no matter what, there is always something new to learn. And I find brim and kingfish are the two fish that do that better than any other species. And that's probably why they're my two favorite species, purely because they just teach you patience, persistence. But then all of that just comes in a nice, neat little package. And at the end of the day, normally it pays off. So even if you go home after catching nothing, you're still taking away something from that session. And I can really respect that. It's great.
Yeah, except for the difference between a brim and a kingfish is... A brim is
a hell of a lot.
a brim is small and eat tiny stick baits, whereas a kingfish will eat massive stick baits. And the good thing also about brim is that you can have smash-a-thons on them too. It can be a fish with a million casts and you catch nothing, but you can also have a million casts and catch a million fish too. So, like, it can be really good. On the days, it can be phenomenal fishing.
Absolutely. And another main factor why we love them, it's just like, they're an awesome tournament fish too. So here in Australia, we're not blessed with largemouth bass, unfortunately, but we have brim. So they've really adapted to our tournament scene. So they survive really well in live wells. They can be a really frugal fish that are very tricky to tempt, as we just talked about, which makes them the perfect tournament fish. So I've done a few different tournaments, absolutely love them. They're a whole heap of fun, and it's also cool to see just the tournament supporting a lot of the small towns that these big lake systems and river systems are along. A lot of people get around it. It's a really cool social event. I have lost count of how many people I've met through these events, and where you can follow a brim, I always say follow them because it's going to lead you to a bit of fun. Good.
Yeah. I know the Dill's fished a fair few brim tournaments now all across Victoria, and it's something I'm super excited to do at some point. I've always had this crazy idea to go out and do a tournament just fly fishing. So who knows? We might do it one day.
And no one's really done it for a long time. Like there was one like mid-2000s, I think, down the Hopkins, a few fly dudes won it. I think they're fishing orange BMSs along the rock walls and just throws that different element. Like in all my tournaments, I'm always using conventional techniques, just like pretty much every single other person, but come in with a different spin of it, and that's going to come out on top. Like, I've taken the approach of using a few different lures and everything to what the pack throws, and have got some top five, top three, top two spots doing that. Just different factors goes well, but I guess we'll leave that for another podcast. I'm not going to go into tournaments and all the bits and pieces like that, but
yeah, I think that's definitely
a thing to think about.
Yeah, I think tournaments will definitely feature in another episode, and hopefully with any luck, that's one where Dylan and I have gone and fished one together. Not as like we'll be fishing against each other, but we'll be fishing it together. Hopefully,
could you imagine how gumby that would be if we did one together? That'd be fun.
We're doing it.
It's happening.
Someone lend us a boat, please.
Yeah.
All right.
Tow that boat. Oh, wait, we have the cars to do that.
Yeah, we've got the cars now.
I'm sorry to say that in one sentence.
Yeah. All right. So where did it, like, so we're going to talk about where it began for us in our brim journey. So our fishing journeys, like, they started years ago, but our brim journeys, I guess for me, they were a little bit later. They were probably in the midway of my fishing journey. I caught a fair few years ago now, when my sister first started university down here in Warrnambool. I went down to visit her. Obviously, I knew that she was in Warrnambool, so that's the Hopkins River down there. She was staying on campus, so it was just a short walk down to the river. It was one of my most memorable sessions, because obviously it was the first time I caught brim on lures. I'd caught a few brim in the past, just on bait. But I think I'll just talk about it, you know, in terms of where my brim lure fishing, like brim, yeah, brim, yeah, brim lure fishing. I had something else in my head, but I started. So I walked down one day with a mate, and we were just talking a little bit of shit. We went to the fishing store down in, well, what was it called? Was it Hooked On? Hooked On or Hooked Up?
Hooked Up, I'm going to go with. I got that very wrong, but it doesn't exist anymore, so it's like.
Yeah, I reckon it was Hooked On. Anyway, I went down there, asked them to get a few lures and stuff, and what sort of work down there. So I bought some braid and stuff. I went down there with one of my mates, and I was throwing some, like, I think it was the Atomic Grub in this weird white pearlescent colour. And I managed to get a first brim. And that was, yeah, it was really cool. These Atomic Grubs smell like garlic. It was gross. My hands smell like an Italian restaurant. It's real dirty.
That's the atomic fat grub, isn't it?
Yeah, the Atomic Fat Grub.
I remember throwing them at Metro Valley. They're like this. For those who don't know the Atomic Fat Grub, we've got to tell them what they are. Because they're like not the OG grub, but I guess you'd say Mann's or something made the OG grub in Australia, but then the Atomic Fat Grub came out. And I remember it being like this new plastic, and I remember throwing them, and their tail wouldn't swim if it was anything less than like a 1/12 jig head. And they were really, really tough material, like tall, easy, totally opposite to what you'd find these days. But hey, they caught fish.
Yeah, they caught heaps of fish. So we were casting these things. I don't know what jig heads I was casting them on. Probably something terrible. Probably squidgy jig heads at that
point. Quarter ounce.
Quarter ounce. No, they weren't quarter ounce. They might have been a couple of grams. I reckon they were like squidgy jig heads. But yeah, went down one of the flats just behind Deakin down there. And yeah, managed to catch a couple of brim down there, and a few estuary perch too. So they were really cool. Like, we were just fishing land-based, wading in. And yeah, we're just pumping out casts as far as we possibly could. And now what I know about the system is I was probably only casting into a meter of water. And I reckon this was sometime in mid-autumn. So it was starting to cool down a bit. Normally when they'd like start moving slightly deeper, like a lot of the fish start moving off the edges. And yeah, we were just like pumping out casts, and yeah, probably still only into a meter of water. And it was just a really cool thing. I was like, oh yeah, I'll never forget it. I think I caught three brim in one session, which is by no means a lot of fish at all.
But it's just that, like, first, I can remember my first one on lure, but we'll get to that in a sec. But it was like, when you've got that target in your mind and you've seen, and like, I'm sure you're like me, Mitch, you probably sat there as, like, when you're younger watching the Starler on Bushy DVDs, thinking, oh God, I've got to get myself one of these brim on a plastic. I've caught so many on prawns and pippies and everything else. Maybe I can get one on a plastic one day. And then you're like, you're out there and you try, and the first one you ever hook, and it's like when you feel that pluck and you set the hook and you're like, is that going to be a brim? Is that going to be a brim? It pops up in you. It's like a salmon or something. And you're like, oh, come on, next one, next one, next one. And then when it finally happens, it's just like the biggest weight's off your shoulders. But then exactly like you said, you catch one and all of a sudden it's just like someone flicks a switch and it's just like, have all the brims.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's, yeah, I wish I could say, like a lot of things, once you've done it once, you've done it like you've done it 1,000 times. But I've done it one, like at that point, I'd done it once and I had done it once. I've only done it once. So there was a long learning curve left after that.
But it had been done.
And yeah, I did. I have since caught a lot of brim on lures and flies since then. So that's a bit about my first, like my journey into the old brim. So we'll pass over to Dylan, see what he's been up to. Like, well, see what, he, not what he's been up to, but what he was up to when he first caught his journey to brim.
Yes. So I remember the first time it sort of clicked to me to try catch a brim on a lure. I was fishing with prawns as a kid and I cast out my prawn and didn't get a bite within about 30 seconds, which is pretty typical of throwing a prawn at a brim. And so I wound it in, and as I was winding it in, something in my head just said, just wind your bait really slow and see what happens. And I was winding it really slow, and sure enough, it got eaten, and I pulled up at the time this massive brim. Looking back on it now, it was probably like a 30-centimeter wrap, this little tiny one. But at the time, I was like, this is cool, and I had this thought like, maybe I can catch one of these on a lure. And so then I went and watched these things like the squidgy DVDs and probably watched a few shows and read some magazine articles. And that got the juices flowing. I remember one day I found some, I think it came in a magazine. I got a pack. Remember those Storm Twitch and Nippers, Mitch, at all?
Oh.
This is going back along. Like horrible rubber, little bass yabby imitation with an internal weight with the puny little pre-rigged hook.
Gross. Disgusting looking, kind of disgusting, but also kind of really, like, quite lifelike, probably pretty modern for what?
Too lifelike.
Yeah, too lifelike. Like, it's like someone had just got, like, a nipper and then just cast it out of plastic, and that was it, on a hook with a bit of lead, way overweighted, just crazy things.
Yeah, and so I remember I got one of them, and I tried, I reckon, for like a year throwing them, and I probably got down to the last few in the pack, and I went down the back of my house at the time. And I've thrown it into a snag and I had this monster brim come up and eat it and busted me off. And I remember just raging and probably had a few tears as a young kid and wasn't too happy with it. It just sparked that addiction. And I was like, this is cool. And then I was like, oh, I've lost my chance. I tried for like a year. I'm going to go back and do it again. And I think I went back that afternoon and got one of the fish off the snag and I was just yahooing. And ever since then, I was like, awesome, did it. So I progressed pretty quickly. And I remember I went out and bought one of the old Steve Starling Starlo sticks and some Berkeley Fireline and all sorts of the products from the time back then. And I remember the first session it had, like Mitch was saying, where it really clicked. I had the old squidgy bloodworm wriggler on like a nice light jig head and I've tried some of the fluorocarbon I'd heard about. And sure enough, I think I got about 5 brim in a session out of one of the small surf coast estuaries. And I was like, that is awesome. And I went back every couple of days and did it again and again and again and again until I just got very confident in that technique. And well, here I am today, however many years later. So pretty cool introduction, I guess I'd say.
But yeah, definitely going back to the sciencey side of things, the reason that Jill probably went for a year without getting a brim on a twitchy nipper is because I don't think there's a whole lot of nippers in that system, is there?
If there was one, I'd be amazed.
Yeah, if there has ever been a nipper in that system that he was fishing, like, yeah, I'd be surprised, and so would he. So yeah, it pays.
I should have done my bachelor degree back then when I was about 10 and I would have been rolling, but I...
Yeah, well, like, yeah, nowadays we use the generic, like, Z-Man grubs, and that just covers basically everything from nippers to worms to whatever. So,
when in doubt, tie a Z-Man grub on. I swear there's so many dudes now who only, like, throw Z-Man grubs and nothing else. That's, like, how many Instagram accounts can you think of? And every single plastic that is in the mouth of any fish, 2.5-inch motor or grub.
Yeah, and if it's not a 2.5-inch motor or grub, it's a 2-inch motor oil grub. And if it's not one of those, it's a Tsum Tsum in motor oil.
Oh, that's if you're lucky.
That's if you're lucky. But yeah.
Fast. It's one of those things that drives me mental, like branch out. And I guess that's what we'll talk about in this podcast as well today. But, well, I guess we can't hang shit on everyone right now, as much as I'd love to.
Yeah. If we learn more and become a bit more qualified, well, we're fairly qualified. We'll start ragging on some people. Not personally, but you'll know who you
are. We've got a while to go there, don't we?
That's it. No, we don't.
Sorry to anyone who only uses 2.5-inch grubs there. If you need any tips, let us know.
Yeah, let Dill know. He knows more about it than I do. So shoot him. Hit him up.
Anyway, well, I guess we should talk about a bit of the old stuff, whether it be the old Starlight or Bushy DVDs, the Berkeley Fireline, the beautiful old fused braids. What else? Spiderwire, Mitch.
Oh, I was wondering if I still had Spiderwire or one of the bait casters, but I don't. Spiderwire is long gone. Firewire is long gone. Gel spun polyethylene lines, like, so that's like basically what fire lines were made out of. Dead to me. Should be dead. Should be dead to everyone. It's just
they served their purpose.
They served their purpose well, which was being like one of the first braids and like marketed really well. They just weren't very good. So the old stuff, right during that period, contemporary, not so good. But hey, you have to, like, you live and you learn. Things get better. Everything's getting better every single day. So we can't rag on it.
Time. Like, you look at every 5-year block within, well, you could say life, but for this, we'll talk about the fishing industry. And you look at the progression of rods, reels, sounders, boats, whatever it might be. Everything. You just cannot even fathom what's coming next. And it's like, in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, we'll be looking at what we have now and laughing probably. But hey, that's the cool part. But I guess on that, we should talk about some, well, modern gear, Mitch. So I guess there's heaps of cool new modern bits and pieces that we love. And whether it be reels, rods, 8-strand, like, we should talk about, I guess, braid, Mitch. Like, you just talked about the old fused braids and like poly braids and all of that, but braids these days, 8 strands, 13 strands, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, obviously, there's still 4 strands, 8 strands. And did you say there was a 13 strand braid?
Yeah, it's quite a few now.
Really?
I think Gosen make one, Daiwa make about 2 or 3. Like, they got their More Than one, they got the Saltiga braid. They're cool.
Actually, to be fair, I feel like I did see one I went to Charlie's today to pick up some stuff to go fishing on the weekend. I think I did see one of their 30. I think I saw a 13 strand braid sitting on the shelf. So I didn't really pay too much attention because I haven't been using braid a whole lot recently. But yeah, that's cool. 13 strand braid. Is it still, do you know much about it? Do you know much about
it? Pretty much like the way, I guess we should explain, like, we've explained like fused braids and everything, but pretty much what these 8-strand or 8-carrier, whatever you want to call it. It's so you could say you got almost like 8 fibers together. They're flooded, and that way they're not like fused with a hard coating. So they end up being really, really round, really smooth. They travel through your guides easier. They have next to no memory. So that way they just come off your spool really, really crisp. And a lot of the time they also last a lot longer too. They hold their color better. And you don't get all that fuzzy old shit you'd get over your guides, say, with the old Fireline. I think we all remember that. You look at your guides and they're all like yellow on the inside. Back then, it's like, oh, yeah, whatever. That's just how it is. But now it's like, see the littlest bits of color and you're like, oh, what's going on here? It must be a shitty braid, whatever, whatever.
Yeah, like Fireline, platypus braid, spider wire. There's a stack of old ones that were no good. But yeah, the modern ones, fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. Like, we won't get too much into them. Who knows? We might do a podcast down the track. But if you want to know any brands, what we use or anything like that, just flick us a message. Like, we'll touch on it now. Like, I love Unitika. What do you use, Mitch?
Yeah, I'm using... Is it Unitika Light Jigging?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best.
Yeah, Dill got me onto that. And I haven't looked at another braid since then. So that's what I run on all my spinning reels for them. I've only got a couple now, but... I think I'll buy a couple more like setups soon, and I'll probably still run the same stuff. It's one of the things that's been around for a few years now, and it's kind of standing the test of time. Like,
it's funny. It is a 4-strand braid. Like, I went through a stage ago on like 8-strand braids and spending a hell of a lot of money on a single spool to do one reel. And well, light jigging, it's not a cheap braid by any means. You're paying, I think, about $89 for a spool of 0.8, but you get two. You can do 2 reels with it, which is a bonus. But I just find it lasts. I've had one reel, I reckon I've had the same spool of braid on for 5 years and I haven't even reversed it. It just stands the test of time. It is awesome, awesome braid. But There's plenty of others we use. If you want to know about them, just flick us a message. We're more than happy to help.
Yeah, like, yeah, we've used them all. Sunline Super PE, Rockfish PE, like I said, Platypus Braid, Firelines, Spider Wire, Uniticker Silver Thread. Like, we've used TD Sensor, like I said, Diver Braids, Guzen. We've used in terms of stuff, we've used a stack. So if you have an interest in what we've used and what we would recommend in certain price range, yeah, hit us up. We'll let you know. And if there's if you ask us about something that we don't know, yeah, we might refer you on to someone else that probably is a bit more qualified on those sorts of products. So,
which they'll be out there. But, well, I guess now a really cool point. It's what kicked off the whole brim and lure movement in Australia, but it definitely flows into the modern techniques and tactics and the whole evolution of our brim fishing in Australia. And you could say almost to every sport fish this applies. And it's pretty much that whole JDM bass movement. So a lot of the stuff that's coming out of Japan, obviously, and also a lot of the American influences from their bass scene over there. So you got, like, obviously your largemouth and smallmouth bass. But then from Japan, you've got fish like your chinu, your ajing, your yamame, everything like that. Those small finesse fish that all our brim lures are pretty much based off. So you got, like, a lot of your lures by Eco Gear, a lot of your Daiwa lures, a heap of your mega bass, OSP, whatever it be. All these lures have come from overseas, not designed to catch brim. But it's gotten to the stage where our fishery over here started to influence a lot of design over there. Hence why you've got, you got the whole Silver Wolf series that came out a few years ago from Daiwa. I could not even name how many off the top of my head that have come out. But the really cool thing is you're seeing a lot of Aussie design stuff too. So Cranker Mitch.
Yeah, well, there's Cranker, but we'll go back to Cranker in a second. But like the Hobie World tournaments now, like, have featured, like, some of their events in Australia where they're chasing brim. So, like, our brim stands having a bit.
Absolutely.
Australia's finally got a fish in the work that's putting
recognized.
Yeah, is influencing how people sort of do a few things, like, around the world. Yeah,
absolutely. Or at least
being recognized by other countries, which is pretty cool, I reckon. Because obviously, yeah, brim, bass, like, so for bass, if there's someone listening from America, our bass aren't largemouth bass. They're Australian bass. They're not technically a bass. They're part of the perch family. But they're like we've got a pretty cool tournament scene, which has been influenced by American stuff. So people are using jigs and stuff. Then we have Barra. There's a bit going on now. So that's for another episode. But we've probably gone off topic a little bit. But
too much to talk about there, isn't there? Yeah, once you start thinking about all the JDM and US stuff.
But yeah, and then there's, like, high quality reels. So Dylan and I are a bit of a stickler for good gear, and we're not talking, like, for a lot of the stuff. Yeah, we can use the highest of high quality stuff. So Dill uses some really, what do you use, Dill?
So at the minute, I'll start with the rods. I'm running Miller rods. I just find the build quality is second to none compared to Eve and any of the JDM rods I've picked up. Like, Millers, you pick them up, the lightest rods I can find. I will say that is not a factor I find in picking a rod. A balanced combo is all that. But the reason I go Millers, really, really good components, especially on your higher end models. Their production models there, that's just what I run. You're looking at that sort of $350 to $600 range. And for your money, you're getting the best build quality, fantastic components. All your rods are going to be on the blank, perfectly, perfectly aligned guides. And they're just the most sensitive rods and most technique specific rods I can find. And, like, lost for words, put it that way.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You'll just find the graphite that are in those blanks are just super crisp. To my techniques, they just match it perfectly. Reel-wise, I've used Daiwa. I'm always sort of gone on the Daiwa end. I don't really care about this Daiwa, Shimano, whatever. Use whatever you like. I just find the Daiwa tournament drags, especially on the pre-LT models, fantastic. I just like the smoothness. I find a lot of them balance really well. So Daiwa Steezers, Certates, Saluvius, and Silver Creeks, that's all I run pretty much. I love them.
Yeah, and there's plenty of people that run top of the range, like Exists and stuff. And don't get me wrong, fantastic reels, but like value for money wise, sitting in that mid price range, so probably from Steezers, is the area that Dylan and I go for when it comes to sort of light game sort of stuff, so brim, trout sort of style. And I run a couple of Silver Creeks. I've run Luvises, I run Cetates, what were they called? Like the Caldeas. I've run TD Souls. We've run a lot of stuff. But we sort of sit mid price range Daiwa. But yeah, we have no affiliation with Daiwa. We just like to use good gear, so happy to use it. Like Abu Garcia is releasing some really cool stuff at the moment.
They've got a lot of fantastic new reels.
Actually. Yeah, they got some
a bit of a play with them down at work. And
yeah, well, I know the few of the
cool stuff. Watch what they bring out in the next few years, because I think they'll really start coming on the scene.
Yeah, well, Colby Lesko has been smashing a stack of fish on the super light setup that Abu's released, and I picked it up one day and it was sick. Like it was real crisp. So yeah. We like certain stuff, but like that's just personal preference, really, when it all boils down to it. But like I think when we're talking sort of our modern techniques, I think to me, and still might be different to me, but when it comes down to it, like the two main things are definitely like your rod and your line choices. So be that braid or like spinning fluorocarbon. Definitely comes down to rods and line selection for me. What do you think, Dil?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Like the most important thing is the rod. As they always say, it's an extension of your arm. That rod connects you to the fish. Well, I guess the line does, the hook does, but the rod is what imparts the action to your lure. So you want a rod that is specifically made for the lure you're fishing. But don't get fooled by what's on the rod if it says a crankbait rod or whatever it might say. After fishing for long enough, personally, I've found, I know, say, if I pick up a rod and I'm fishing a Z-Man grub, let's say, because we're always talking about Z-Man grubs, I personally love a rod that is pretty stiff in the tip, so I can really impart that action on that grub without it sort of being really soft. Like, I've had a lot of rods, say, like Samurais or Atomic Arrows, and they're very, very soft, sloppy rods. Now, they serve purposes for other techniques like using, but when I fish plastics, I just find you go to flick it and it's just none of that energy you're transferring to the rod, like hardly any of it ends up getting to your lure. It's just all absorbed by the blank. And you're like, well, for that, I'll go a rod that's nice and tippy. I flick that rod, it moves the grub. But then I want that blank to be softer once it starts to load, to really just absorb the shock of that fish and let that fish eat the lure. So that's one example. If I'm fishing a hard bodies, I like something similar, but a bit stiffer down a blank. So for instance, the Miller Rod Twitch Freak, that's what I run for my hard bodies, for instance. And I just find it's got a really stiff tip, but then that blank, it's what you call a multi-loading blank. So that way it loads, it keeps those hooks in. It's got that stiffness when you want to twitch your lure and really rip it and jab it into the mud and puff up sand and debris on the bottom and get the fish's attention. But most importantly, once that fish has hit your lure, those hooks are in. They're not getting ripped out by a big, heavy blank like on a lot of your traditional old hard body rods. So just something to consider. Like the rod is everything. You can spend $100 on a reel and it's going to take in your line, but the rod, that's where you want to focus your funds. If this is something you're just getting into or you want to progress through.
Yeah. But in saying that, we're talking high end stuff because it's what we like, but realistically it's not like you go with a Kmart rod, and go catch fish. Like, if you take whatever you can get out there and go fishing and then work your way up from there, it is a lot of money to drop on gear. And like, you can't have, like, you don't just get like a stack of combos and not spend a stack of your money. So take what you can get out there, get in there, buy a couple of lures and just try it, see if you like it, and then keep going. If you're listening to this, you probably like it anyway, so that's just ramble and garbage. But
yeah, you'll know when you like it if you end up with about 50,000 rods laying around your house.
But yeah, that's right.
That's the thing.
And you're buying and selling stuff to pay for things, and it's the addiction that your parents aren't going to question, that's for sure. They might actually, to be fair, when they wonder why you're not at dinner, they might question it, actually. I don't know. Mum has questions.
They'll be happy to know exactly why you're not at dinner, Mitchell.
Yeah, at least it's not
happy in the long run.
At least it's not real drugs. Like, fishing is a drug, but it's not a real drug. And I guess last thing we were talking about, sort of the modern evolutions of fishing stuff, there's been a couple of breakthrough brands in the last, we're going on the last sort of 5 years.
10 years.
Yeah, so we'll go over the last 10 years. Yeah, there's a couple of breakthrough brands. We're going to rattle off a few of them quickly into some of their products that we like. And like we said, we're not affiliated with anyone. It's just stuff that we like. So personally, I really like a lot of the Z-Man range. Like the material.
Just the whole Elastec material.
Yeah, it just like you could. And I remember like back in the days of the Brimmaster forums deal, everyone was like, there's a heap of guys fishing over in Western Australia, and they seem to have a really bad problem with like toadfish over there. And they would just go there and they'd be chewing every single soft plastic to pieces. If you're someone listening from WA and you're from Brimmaster forums, like get in touch. They're great memories from them. So Z-Man, yeah, they brought out the Elastec material, and that meant the toadies have
I guess you'd say they made it common. Like I think it was it was Snapback that first had it, which I remember using.
Yeah, they did.
That's going back a long way now.
So Z-Man's obviously because of the materials, and then they've got some really cool models as well that have just fit the bill really well. So obviously the Slim Swims and 2.5-inch grubs. They've got the 2-inch grubs, not my favourite, but like they get the job done as well. So in terms of soft plastics, they're really good. What do you still?
Plastic wise?
Yep.
Massive on Z-Man. Like for me, they've overtaken it. I use, like, I'd say 99% of the time I run Slim Swims because I find I've just got a few techniques I've really got confidence in, I guess, with Slims, whether it's fishing them flats or deep, or there's a whole myriad of ways. We'll definitely touch in that on another episode though, but I will say I use a bit of Kitech now. Like they're polar opposite. They're really soft material, flake apart easy, but the second a fish hits them, but they work. Damiki Monster Mickeys, use them forever, always work. And still, if I can find the old squidgies, the originals, I still run them.
Yeah.
Very rare. Like I got very lucky. I found a whole heap for $1 a packet in a bargain bin last year, and I think I fainted on the ground.
Oh, it was awesome. Dylan and I did a trip one day down to Lakes Entrance for like one of the volunteers.
Oh my god, that was awesome.
And we went into this dingy little tackle store down there. And we went in there and we just found like, I don't know if it was the mother load. It was a sort of the mother load of like original 80 mil wrigglers in like colours like Alvin Purple. I think we found a fair few bloodworms left, but the one that like you just cannot, well, you can still buy it, but it's just not the same. It's like was it Evil Minnow?
Yeah, and that was when you got me onto Evil Minnow, and I think we went to like the Moyne the day we went back, and you're like, put an Evil Minnow wriggler on. I'm like, all right, and it was just like brim, 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 brim. No. All right, that color's good because I always used like Flash Prawn, Wasabi, and Bloodworm, and a few others, and Parrot.
Yeah, Parrot was good. And like for other stuff, I usually use like drop bear and stuff. But yeah, Evil Minnow was just a killer, especially say in the Mare Eye as well when the salt water was pushing up in the middle of winter. That was real good. Anyway, that's soft plastics. There's a lot of good stuff out there in terms of soft plastics. And like now there's new stuff coming through like Daiwa Bait Junkies. And obviously there's heaps of other stuff out there too. I can't forget Gulp. Gulp made a heap of cool stuff for, like obviously that have gone through the ages. In terms of soft plastics. Quickly into a couple of last lures. Dill will touch on this because he has a lot more authority to talk about it. What are some other lures you love, Dill?
Right, Aussie made cranker lures, like especially, like I love the cranks, but we will be talking about also the crabs, like just absolute original design that just blew up. Like I remember when these things came out and you had to get your pre-order in, and then I remember planning a trip around my pre-order, and when they came in, I remember running into it was Trellies Geelong, or it might have even been before it was even the Trellies. I remember running in, getting my pre-orders, hopped in the car, drove 5 hours down to Nelson straight away, threw the cranker crabs, probably lost them all within the first day, but my God, I've never fished a lure like it. Like the Brim had obviously never seen this little crab thing. So for those who don't know them, I guess we should probably explain what they are. They're like a 50 mil little crab. They do have a heap of other sizes too, but they have these floating claws, a whole heap of different colours. They come pre-rigged with decoy hooks, which me and Mitch both absolutely love. They got like really lifelike legs, but most importantly, they are just, you sit them side by side by a crab and and they are perfect. And if you just shuffle them along with the small wind and shake of your rod, they are lifelike. And poor Brim, even this day and age, they can still hardly tell the difference.
Yeah.
They get slammed.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're so lifelike, and they're coming in a stack of different colours and red, black colours. They just look so much like a real crab. They're deadly everywhere, and like not just Victoria. Like, they've won tournaments all over the place. They are properly good.
Other one, I guess, is our all-time favourite. A bit of a JDM one here, but we got to talk about it, don't we?
We have to talk about this. And we will all, I guess, if you listen to the first episode, we also talked about it there too. So this isn't new. But Dil, take it away.
The founder of our friendship, the OSP Bent Minnow.
The thing that brought us together. The reason that the On The Cast podcast is here, On The Cast Media is around, is because of the quiet little banana-shaped lure, the Bent Minnow.
I don't even think we need to explain more. It says it all, doesn't it?
To be fair, it looks like a piece of plastic that's like a lure that's been warped in the sun, and then someone's like, "Yeah, we'll cast this out anyway," and it worked real good. That's basically what the OSP Bent Minnow is, and it is absolute slayer. And you can buy the knockoffs of them. Nothing's as good. Yeah, and you might throw them into some gnarly country. And the good thing about it is they look so lifelike, like a dead bait fish, that you can throw them on heavy leaders. So just don't be silly and just throw them on like 12-pound or something heavier than your conventional stuff. So OSP Bent Minnows.
I think I'll say I've probably had more like those sessions where you just slam fish in summer, where you get like 100, 150 fish or something horrific through a day, and it's just on. What lure is it normally on?
It's Bent Minnow. I honestly, like, aside from maybe a few vibe smash-a-thons, I would say the lure that I've caught the vast majority of my brim on, it would be like in big numbers in like individual sessions, would be Bent Minnows. They just like in summer, obviously, just find a flat, cast in shallow, bendy minnows.
I guess we've got to mention, the first ever time I saw them, I was in New South Wales fishing Brisbane water or the Hawkesbury. Brisbane water. And I remember some guy on the flat just up for me spanking fish. And I was like, what's this guy doing? He's catching heaps of whiting and brim and stuff. Oh. And I'd fished for like probably about 3 kilometres of this flat edge, just walking the whole way along it. Got shit all. And I was like, oh, what's going on here? So I've looked at his lure, and I'm like, he's got this one of the lime chartreuse bent minnows. I'm like, oh, that's one of those $35 things. Oh, I don't really want to spend that much for a lure. Long story short, I did. I went home, tied on I bought the white one because that's all that was left. And I was like, oh, the white one, that's not going to go well. Well, now it's one of my favorite colors. But so this day I've thrown it out and I've seen all these fish sitting on the flat. And this particular flat I was fishing was on one of those small surf coast estuaries, like I mentioned earlier. And you'd normally see a lot of like really nice quality fish, like anything from that, say, 700 grams to kilo and a bit, and they're all sitting in mud, and normally you throw anything over the top of them and they just spook. I remember like sending a bent minnow over the top and you'd be like twitch, 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 get it, dive under, pop back up, and you just see every brim on that flat within a 5 meter radius look up and just charge it and demolish it, and it got detonated, and I was like, this is awesome. Catch a fish, throw it back, did it again and again and again. Now they wised up pretty quickly, but those fish had never seen that lure before and reacted like I'd never seen. And to this day, like, you go to any new estuary that you haven't really fished before in a warm time of year, what's the first lure you throw on?
It's bent minnow. So
bent minnow.
and that's not to say that bent minnows are the only surface lures you can use out there, but I probably would say they are the most effective.
It definitely depends. Like, there's still another 4 or 5 I'd use, but every now and then I might.
Yeah, like Bass Day Sugar Bends, Lucky Craft Sammy 65s. I still get them out every so often because they cast an absolute mile, unlike
the Bent Minnows. The other one's similar to those. That's really good. Cultiva's Zip and Ziggy. I bought a whole heap for Taylor out of a bargain bin, and now I went and paid full price for them because they were awesome on brim.
Yeah. And then other lures as well, just rattling them off, like Jackal Chubbies, Jackal Minnows, Chubby Minnows, Colt Minnows, and then there's like Lucky Craft have Flash Minnows, Obviously, Eco Gear, MX-48s, MW-62s, SX-40s. Like SX-40s will stand the test of time. There is a stack of stuff out there that'll get you fish in terms of hard bodies. But yeah, that's a quick run through. We're going to keep moving on because otherwise we'll never get to sleep.
Too much. We'll touch on our favourites later, but that'll give you a rundown of what's out there. Just go into your local shop and have a look at the wall and
buy them all. Just save all your money and then just buy everything on the wall because support your local tackle shops.
Or don't save your money. Just swipe the credit card and worry about it later. You say you want to. You keep me employed. Thank you very much.
And if you get into trouble with that, you heard nothing from us, so we're sorry about that.
No, not at all.
No, I'm not sorry. It's your fault. You did that to yourself.
Yes. All right. Yeah, so favorite gear, like I said before, Millers and Daiwas are odds. I won't go into why because we've already spoken about that. But yeah, my all-time techniques by a mile is surface, as you might have all guessed. I have a feeling Mitch might be the same as that. But yeah, I love a good jerk baiting sesh too. That sounds a bit funky, but anyone who's a fisho will be like, oh, jerk baiting. Oh yeah, that's good. But yeah, shallow flats, weed beds, throwing 60 to 90 mil jerk baits. I like fishing quite large ones purely just to get that reaction bite. When you're ripping a jerk bait and you feel it just get jammed, there's nothing better, whether it be a massive brim or a flathead or whatever eats it. It is a whole lot of fun and often quite visual too. I guess I should mention my favorite all-time lures. Like if I could have just a couple for brim. I tried to get this list down to three, but it was not going to happen. I hope I'm forgiven there, Mitch.
No.
But shit. That's right. Obviously, bent minnow. The Oz Tackle Shinku for anyone who fishes around man-made structure, which I do a heck of a lot of now. Got to have a Shinku, just a little stick minnow that vibrates on the way down. Looks just like a falling piece of muscle or a falling bit of weed or a little crustacean that's just dislodged. They are just deadly. A real natural color in that. Can't go wrong. Bondi Brown. If you have any, let me know and I will buy them off you because I am almost out. If I could have a Shad Eco Gear SX40, which I think Mitch mentioned earlier, then they are just a small 40 mil Shad. Nothing special about them. Suspend perfect. Come with great hooks out of the packet. Love them to death. You'd have to have Z-Man Slim Swim in there for my plastic. Now, I don't fish as many plastic as I used to, but I just find these are a great little sandworm imitation, or if there's lots of little bait fish around, put on a real naturally sort of clear colour, or like the bad shad. Oh, you can't go wrong. How many fish have you got in a Slim, Mitch?
Oh,
even species-wise.
Oh, species-wise, trout, estuary perch, redfin.
Chewies.
Everything. Yeah. Yep. No. So I would definitely say bent minnow for me as well. Bent minnows in there. Shinkus I'd probably replace with Tamco sinking stick minnows, but that's just because I
bougie. Oh, I like it.
yeah, a bit bougie. They're the real, like, you can't find
real deal.
You can't find them anymore, and they're probably, I don't know if they're as good as Shinkus. They probably are. They're probably better. I don't know. They're the OG, but they stand the test of time. So I love them. Obviously, SX40s are great in like colors. Like, what is it, 307?
I've been a big fan of the 302, 303, 313, and 345. So if anyone wants to bother looking up those color codes, you'll find a few good lures.
And they'll probably be all your favorites too, because they're everyone's favorite out there.
Are awesome.
They're awesome. Yeah, I love the Slim Swim, so my predominantly favorite three colors in those would have to be, I love Bad Shad. Dill got me into Bad Shad. I remember fishing Rock Hard one day, fishing Bad Shads, smashed it. They were fantastic. And then I also like Bloodworm. That's really good. It goes really good too. And then every so often, I used to like them a lot more, but I used to like Motor Oil. Super goes good on its day too. Dill's written down my more lure. What do you reckon?
Oh, it'd have to be, it's a tough one. Probably like a Daiwa Spike or a Double Clutch 75. Like, you just rip them down. Like, they're funny. A lot of people will almost call them like a crankbait, which just makes me shake in my boots to think of casting it out and winding it straight back in. Like, you got to cast it out and rip it super violently and just sit it there for 5 seconds and just drag it through all the silt and make it puff up and spin and dance like a little injured bait fish. on heroin because it's just cooked. They are two lures, should I say. Two different lures, but yeah, one's almost like an OSP dunk with that really more fat body, like a typical crankbait, but then obviously the double clutch for anyone who doesn't know what they are. Super long, slender 75 mils with a massive bib on them. So the second you put them down deep, they're just digging in the bottom. Now, everything, like a slim swim, everything eats a double clutch. Everything.
Yeah, they're the hard body equivalent. Those things actually slay everything that swims.
Yeah. Like I think I've seen everything from like kingfish in the Gippsland lakes to salmon, and like we had a customer who was just a trout fisher and he wanted to go catch fish offshore. So he was throwing it around at like 20 meters of Barwon Heads and got a 5.5 kilo snapper on one. Like it just shows like that would never happen again. But if it was ever going to happen, it's going to be on the double clutch.
Yeah, just make sure you upgrade the hooks because they're shit.
Oh, upgrade the hook. Like on the small ones, but now they actually come in. So the three largest sizes, so the 115, the 95, and the 75, they all come with owners now. So ST36s, which we'll talk about soon enough, but it saves you a few dollars in upgrading hooks now, which is just fantastic.
Yeah. All right. So that touches on our all-time favorite lures. Now, for me at the moment, I am just gagging for fly fishing. Love it. I don't know why I love it so much. It's like if you don't like money, go fly fishing. It'll suck your dollars out of you faster than anything. But yeah, quickly on the fly fishing spectrum, I think you can get away with a lot of different rods. So anything from 3 weight through to a 7 weight. But if you've only got 8 weights or you've only got a 1 weight or whatever you got, it'll work. But yeah, generally speaking, your 4, 5, and 6 weights are probably the most appropriate sort of rods for it. And there are heaps of good rods out there now. It's almost a bit different to the conventional world. There is just stacks of fly fishing rod brands out there. It's like, it has been obviously one of the fishing tactics that have been around for a long time. So yeah, there's heaps of stuff out there in terms of rod. I like sort of the fast reaction weight rod, so you can punch a cast out there. So like the new Primal rods, I reckon, are going to be real good. So that's Primal Raws and Primal Megas. I reckon they'd be pretty wicked. I use a lot of the Vision rods, like the Vision Onkies and stuff. I like them as well. They're a bit of a softer action rod, but it depends. It's all about presentation at the end of the day. So fast action rods are going to pump out big casts, and slower action rods are going to have a bit more of a delicate presentation as well. So if you sight cast and fish, that might be sort of up your alley. When it comes to fly, I guess the main thing about fly fishing is the rod and the line combination, much like your conventional stuff too. When it comes to lines, I mainly use floating lines because it's just what I mainly do. Especially in warmer months, you'll get away with a floating line only. Fishing anywhere down to about four feet. So yeah, meter and a half floating line will do a pretty good job. And it also, like, it really depends on what sort of action you want your flies to have. And that also means like what sort of flies you'll be fishing to. So floating lines will be pretty good. But I also carry, scientific angler integrated, sinking lines. So that's a D5 head, then the middle section is a D3 and then followed by intermediate. So they just get a nice nice sink rate on your fly line, keeps you nice and connected. And then also intermediate lines, like intermediate sink tips, full intermediates, probably an intermediate sink tips what you need really. And when it comes to flies, it's pretty simple. I even know that Dills managed to, have you landed fish on a Primon fly?
Believe it or not, I actually have.
Yeah.
So I am the gumpiest fly cast that ever casted a fly. I should probably troll a fly, dare I say it. Casting a fly rod, but I didn't resort to it. So you'll be happy there, Mitchell. Yes. But yeah, so I've never got any big Primon fly. I tried once. I remember I tied up the most gross fly ever within my first week of moving to Warrnambool and waded the flat to the Hopkins when it was super high. And I remember like casting back towards the like sort of sandstone cliff there at the front, hooked what would have been like a kilo and a bit brim, like a really big one. And then I had no idea how to fight a fish, on like a decent fish on a fly rod. And it's just like stripped all the fly line out of my hands and got me onto the reel. And I'm just like, tried to muscle it way too much. It is just like belted up through all of like sandstone boulders there. And it just shredded me. And I was like, that was cool. And I thought I'd get really addicted. And I honestly think that was probably the last time I ever went fly fishing. And it was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
That will change. I am going to do it again.
Yeah, do it.
Which said he's going to help me out.
Oh, I don't know if it'll be any help, but I'll certainly give it a crack. Yes. Do show me the inside of his fly tying equipment box. And I think the vast majority of his materials have been eaten by like some sort of
rats. Yes.
Yeah, rats and bugs and
from
shit.
From the shed.
Yeah, it was nasty sight. So,
but yeah, even the box has been eaten by rats. I think we might have to put a photo up of it.
Oh,
hilarious!
If we can put the photo, if we can get a photo of that box, we'll put it somewhere up on our Instagram titled "Rat Box." Yeah.
The rat box,
and yeah, to be fair, it's just throw that out, dude. Really. But yeah, when it comes to flies, you can catch them on a heap of stuff. Brim, they're not super crazy picky, but like traditionally for brim. Like the humble BMS created by Miles Wilson, so it stands for Bull and Marrow Special, is just one of the go-to flies. Yeah, you can't beat it. Designed for obviously Lake Bull and Marrow down here in the south, like southwest of Victoria, but it has just translated so well over to brim. The original version was categorized with like a little glass bead and then like a little shrimp body with a bit of tinsel wrapped up the body and then rustled out with some Velcro. Yeah, that's a bit of technical fly talk, but yeah, BMS, great fly. Olive's a great color. Olive with like orange pinks tails. Also chartreuse body with pink tails. Black with chartreuse and pink tail. Heaps of different varieties, and now that I've been getting more into my fly tying as well, a lot of different materials out there to tie with too. So BMS, there's a stack of different shrimp flies. So like BWC fly, so Brett Clark, he ties a heap of really sick flies. So yeah, that's BWC flies on Instagram if you want to check out his stuff. He ties some really, really cool shrimp flies, so like the raw shrimp. I've forgotten the names of like a lot of the other patterns. But they're like maybe not for us necessarily, but like when Dill was talking about his East Gippsland fish, coughing up some prawns and stuff, it's probably a really good sort of style of fly to be taught for using more on the east side of Australia, like up, like very east of east
south coast.
Yeah. So the eastern side of Victoria, up into the south to mid coast of New South Wales too. So
yeah, I think Stylo was getting a lot of using a few of his flies recently. I've seen on Insta, he's been getting beast. Like I think he got that was like a high 40s on one the other day. I don't know, I was just jaw dropping about the thought of catching that on a fly. Like that would be cool.
Yeah.
Videos of him getting those fish too. So
yeah. So yes.
I think it was YouTube. But...
Yeah. No. Stalo on his Fishotopia page on YouTube's got some really cool stuff of him chasing some brim on flies. So yeah, he was using shrimps from BWCs, but he's also been tying his own stuff too. So shrimps are great. Crab flies. They also have their purpose, like Dill said, talking about crank crabs and stuff. Crab flies definitely have their place in your fly box too. They can be a bit difficult to fish sometimes, mainly because of the locations that you tend to find crabs in, like southern Australia. They tend to often be around like rocks, a lot of them. So if you're trying to fish a crank crab through there, you need to fish them with sprags. So sprags are like a little bit of mono weed guard that keep your fly sort of semi-weedless, and by weedless, I don't mean weedless, they're more of a structure guard for us. They tend to collect weed. So like fishing them with like little sprags, and same, you can do the same thing with like shrimp flies and your BMS as well. So crab flies can be pretty good in a range of colors. And then there's brim and bass vampires and stuff that go all right too on a given day. But it's just kind of like, and there's like brim bunnies and bass bunnies and stuff. Like there's a lot of flies out there that'll work. But like, if you're going to start off, your BMSs, your shrimp flies are probably the best places to start. I reckon. And then your leader setup, it can be complicated as you like. So you can be fishing like tapered, like pre-made tapered leaders, down to a tippet. So you can have like your mono and fluorocarbon tapered leaders. So mono tends to float up a little bit more. So if you're using your surface flies, which to be fair is a really good bet. So there's a lot of shrimp surface flies out there that are great. They're really good. So like it's like disco shrimp is a really good one. And then not the raw prawn. BWC flies also made a couple of other things in conjunction with a few other fly fishermen. They're really cool. So I'll be certainly fishing some of those sorts of stuff. Gurglers, they're all good. And then leader setup, yeah, as simple as you'd like, but I tend to just fish 2 or 3 part leaders. So a butt section of something along the lines of maybe 40 pound, then going down to 10 pound, then going to 20 pound, and then 10 pound, or I might go 30, 15, 7, like 7 or 8 pound. It's just like, it's the way that I like to structure my leaders, and then just pumping out big casts. It's, we'll probably get down into, like, I think Dylan and I will do some more fly fishing for some brim, and we'll get a bit more technical into that, because it is, I would arguably say, fly fishing is way more technical than your conventional sort of fishing tactics. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Like, it can,
complicated to start fly fishing.
Yeah, like, it can also be super, super simple. You can just go buy one fly rod, a floating line, like you could fish a single piece leader of 10 pound leader and a BMS and catch a stack of fish too. Like it can be really, really simple, but it can also be super, super, super like complicated as well. Like it can be really effective. Yeah. Or, and like your BMSs too, you can get them in hammerhead styles too. So yeah, that's just a quick overview of the fly sort of like situation that I would go for them. And I am so G'd up to catch a heap of fish. Like heaping brim on fly this year, especially like metro fish with dill in Melbourne. I can't wait to get absolutely like pole axed by some of those metro ones and some tight structure.
You'll lose a few hours of work with your flies. I'll tell you what.
That's right, but they're still
swimming around the Maribyrnong rock walls and with a few extra lipies.
That's gonna be good. And then East Gippsland, Dill's obviously talked up the bent minnow bite over there in East Gippsland. So I think I'm gonna be trying my darn bestest to make a nice bent minnow fly. It'll probably take me an hour to tie because I'm a slow fly tire, but at the same time, if it's good, it's gonna be real good.
So good, it's gonna get eaten on the first stroke by a tailor.
Yeah, and then the scissors of the seas.
And I'll laugh. Yeah. Swimming scissors, as I call them. Or cinder brook.
That's it. So that's a bit about our favorite techniques. And I guess we talked about modern technology in terms of sort of our fishing gear. So our modern techniques, rods, reels, lines, 8-strand, 13-strand, 4-strand lines. But a few other bits of modern technology, they're going to make fishing for brim a hell of a lot easier. And again, we'll probably run into detail a bit more in another episode. We're going to be talking a bit more about modern technology. So Dill, what have you sort of noticed in modern technology are probably some of the biggest leaps forward in modern technology that are helping people catch fish?
New age, you cannot deny, like sounders and electric motors. Mostly let's touch on the sounder part of it because they've advanced a lot more. We don't want to drag on for too much longer, but I remember when I had no sounder or anything, and at this stage I was fishing tournaments a lot in boats, and I guess as the non-boater, I wasn't the one paying too much attention to the sounder. Like, oh, sure enough, I'd look, but my whole ethos and I brim fish is I just love to fish edges and structure. I don't fish out deep much, so therefore I'm like, why do I need a sounder? I don't need a sounder, which, as Mitch pointed out to me, was a horrific way to look at it, I guess you could say,
but also a great way to look at it too. So from Dill's narrow-minded perspective of why do you need a sounder, opened my eyes to another form of
absolutely
fishing.
Absolutely. And I guess what you'd say, I think we were sitting up at the Hopkins one day and you were like, you got to get a sounder. He's like, and Mitch was like, you would be unbelievable if you had a sounder. He's like, you've got your technique nailed, just knowing where the fish are automatically, but you don't know where the structure is. You don't know why you're finding fish in the areas where you are. get a sounder. So I was like, oh, whatever, whatever. And I went to BCF and they had them on like, I think it was like a Lowrance something or other 4-inch with downscan for half price. And I was like, well, it's now or never. Bought the shitty little thing and hooked it up and went out. And I was just like poddling along. And I was like, oh, this bank I've fished for ages is a meter deep. And I thought it was like 2 or 3 meters. There you go. And then you go and you to a spot, you always pull fish and you're like, oh, this whole bottom's a reef. And of course, it takes a bit to learn to set up the sounder and learn how to read it. Like, luckily, I'd had that experience before on the tournament scene, I guess. I'd learnt to find reef and all of that, sort of read your side scan, which back then wasn't too good, I should say. And that's where now I'd say we can talk about the best advancement. Personally, for me, downscan was great. You could distinguish fish a lot more, structure a lot more, but then side scan came into it. And especially when you're fishing big expansive pieces of water, you can just find fish so much easier. And at the minute, I don't have side scan. And I'm always asking everyone who I fish with, and I apologize to all those guys, I'll probably yell out every 5 minutes when we're hoofing along, oh, have you got any fish on your side scan? And I'm just like, Dill, just pay the money, go get a new unit, which I will eventually, I guess I could say, Mitch.
Yeah. Yeah, so sounders are fantastic. Like Dill said, like I told him to get a sounder one day. He went out and he got him. And I think one of the first sessions, he went to this little system over towards Nelson. He went to this little system and, yeah, he's come back. He's like, Mitch, I've caught Marlowe, Brim, and Estuary Perch all in one session. And he's like, and then, like, he's like, oh, the sounder's fantastic. And he was just, like, he's like, there's fish in places that he'd never... Like, yeah, he'd never
figured. Considered there being. You just go over it. But little did I know, I was paddling over an awesome reef or something. Like, speaking of that session, I remember like going along and the river dropped off way more than before it did than I previously thought. And I'm going along, hoofing along, go over the drop off. And I'm like, oh, this joint is freaking loaded with mulloway. So it's like, turn around, go back up the bank, head back out, throw a few casts wide, bang a few jute, and got like 3 or 4 mulloway. And I'm like, okay, so that just paid for itself straight away. And then throughout that day, probably got like 10 nice mulloway, a few estuary perch, heaps of brim, mostly because I had fished zones I hadn't before. So worth its weight in gold.
Yeah.
And this day and age, like now we're getting into the age where there's freaking live scope, which, my God, if you want to explain what that is, I've probably rambled for long enough right now.
my brain baffles at live scope, and I'm not sure if it's a technology that I'm going to employ anytime soon, mainly because
the
price range is off the chart. Like, it's insane. But basically what it is, it's like, it's more so down scan orientated. So it's more your 2D picture, except for what you can see though, is if you can see a fish on your live scope, you'll be able to see your fish moving around. So you'll be able to see exactly what branch it is and where, but then you'll be able to see if it moves in, moves out. So you can go and say, it'll tell you how deep it is and how far across it is. So it might be 6 meters down and 30 meters in front of you. So you can peg out this cast exactly like 30 meters in front of you, peg out a cast at it. You can drop it down. You see your lure drop down behind it and you can bring your lure past it. And it's like some people have just been getting some epic catches on that, especially say like impoundment stuff. So
Murray Cod and Mulloway, Barra. I've seen some very cool footage.
And then I've seen some wicked footage of people over in like Canada, Europe and stuff catching some really cool pike on it. So I can really see that, like, that's where technology will go for, especially I reckon for big fish. But when it comes to brim, I'd say side scan is nearly as good as any, because brim aren't moving around at any rate of knots. And they tend to be in slightly more open areas as well. But yeah, live scan, like, I might eat my words there, is like, it's good. It's incredible. And it probably will be like the next thing you have to go win competitions and stuff. Like it is real good. So
yeah, it's funny. Like, I'm not sure how I feel about that yet. Like I personally see it takes away from a lot of the experience of especially finding fish, but I don't know. Technology's cool, I guess. Embrace it. Why not? Like, there's so many advancements that are made, and think about it in 5 years time, what's going to be out there. Like, think about 5 years ago, what we had, even 5 years ago, side scan was still pretty, it was good, but yeah, it wasn't like it is now.
No.
But the definition on it was pretty average.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think sound is probably one of the main technologies that are getting people right into fish. So, and obviously electric motors. So you can pair up a lot of your sounders to your electric motors, like so spotlock, and just stealth approaches to actually approaching fish. So like, obviously if you can find them on the sounder, the next thing is getting close to them. So if you're on a boat, you can't just go putt up to them in your petrol motor. Like, can you deal? You can't just go.
By all means you could, but you're going to be at a severe disadvantage.
Yeah.
Like a good electric is everything. Like, you don't need it. Let's be honest. You don't even need a fancy one. You can just go spend $600-$800 and get a water snake, a Jarvis Walker, and that's whack it on your tinny and that's going to do everything you need. But by all means, if you can get one of the good Minn Kotas, spot, like there's so many good ones out there now, but Spotlock, iPilot, there's a whole heap of very, very cool features that I do not feel quite qualified to talk about, but Google them, YouTube it, have a look. They're great.
Yeah, probably not qualified to talk about them, but we have used them and they are good. And I think Garmin's just released, is it the Garmin Storm 2? So that's got a bunch of cool features as well. It pairs up with their systems too. And then
Google Earth, I guess we could talk about, Mitchell. That's a pretty valuable tool. You could almost say the most valuable in a sense too.
Well, Google Earth is a giant version of your sounder, except you can't see in the water, but you can see parts of the water that look really cool, and you can take a fair bit away from Google Earth, can't you?
And that's what you need. So how many hours a week do you reckon we sit there on our phones? Just, I guess, our missus must be just wondering what the hell we're doing, where in reality we're sitting there on Google Earth scanning every creek and river along the entire coastline. I'm just thinking about, is there fish in that bit? Is there fish there? How do I get there? Is there a four-wheel drive track down there? Is it going to be crap? Can I get my Hilux down there? Am I going to get bogged? But can I get there? And I guess, once I'm there, can I launch my kayak? How far up can I take my kayak? What structure is in here? Or you see like snags and everything and you start screenshotting them and be like, I have to go to this one and that one. And you start sending them to people you're chatting to and planning trips. So I think for us kayak fishermen, especially, like Google Earth, it's too good.
It's too good. Yeah, Google Earth, like I have been on it a bunch the last few weeks, thinking about cod, thinking about yellows, but then also thinking about like some of the bigger rivers. So like obviously the Glenelg has a few little like tributaries and stuff coming off it. I've been thinking like, I wonder what the junction stuff up there looks like. So I've been looking at it.
Absolutely.
And the really cool thing is, say you've got a really big system like all the stuff over in East Gippsland, is you go find a river and you're like, this river's got some really cool fish in. You just get on the Google Maps, go find all like the little offshoot creeks and stuff. And then like the other things that I'm interested in is fishing some really cool, like I really like finding like small water. And yeah, you can lose yourself on Google Maps. So I couldn't imagine what will happen when we actually get out there and go fishing. I suspect we might be pulling some EPIRB cords one day, but it is a really exciting tool. And it just gets the mind frothing, like fully frothing.
It's where the real adventure starts, I guess you could say.
Oh, definitely. The adventure starts at Google Earth. Like that, they should use that as their promotional tool deal.
I don't know. Well, maybe they can buy that slogan off us.
Yeah, you can pay.
The other thing I'll add to that, now that you got it on, like, I think smartphones, like I remember the day, like when we were younger, probably carrying around Nokias with the worst version of the internet you could possibly imagine. But now we have all these fancy Samsungs and iPhones and we're carrying Google Maps in our pocket. And it's like, how many times have we been out in the water? And you're like, oh shit, let's just see where we are. And then you look and you're like, oh, I can go a bit further. And then it gets dark and you're like, oh no. But it's just that thing where you've got that little device where you can see, and I guess it's the same with map cards in your sounder, but well, it's just a lot more high definition on Google. So you can see what's up next and it really sparks that next step in your mind of what's up above that next rapid. What swims in that piece of water above that next rapid and can I catch it? So it's got us into some strife, but I guess it's a handy little tool to have.
Yeah. And the very, very last thing is I want to touch on, and you all know it. Dylan and I obviously fish out of Hobies. And it's not, kayaks aren't necessarily a modern technology. Hobies have been around now for a good, I think what mid mid early 2000s, so what, 2005, 2006?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, so they've been the company itself has been around, like making surfboards and little sailing boats and stuff. But they're like their kayaks, obviously, they're like you can use native watercraft too. But yeah, Dylan and I just use Hobies, and just the stealth, like the level of stealth. Like if you thought an electric motor provided you stealth, Hobies another level. Get on them, get around them, find one secondhand. Worth your weight in gold. What do you reckon, Dill?
Beyond it.
Yeah.
Sell your soul for one.
sell your soul. Sell your mother's soul for it. Doesn't matter.
Hands-free goodness.
Yeah.
It is.
All right.
So allows you to go anywhere and do anything.
Yeah. No, they're awesome.
So, I guess with every species we talk about, we want to talk about the 1% little things that really help you go catch a few extra fish. So I'll keep it quick and short and sweet. So for me, I guess the biggest tip I could give anyone when you're brim fishing is carry a big, nice tub of good terminal gear. So just make sure you have a whole heap of different size trebles of a few different brands. You got a nice pair of split ring pliers. You got a good pair of forceps for getting hooks out of fish or you or anything else. If you have a blunt hook, change it. When you buy your lures, unfortunately, a lot of brim lures on the market come with trashy, trashy hooks. Now, always just upgrade them even there. But like a lot of brands say, like your Eco Gears, they're pretty right. They're coming with owner ST36s out of the packs. But then, unfortunately, a lot of, say, your OSPs, a lot of Jackals, a lot of Bastays and Lucky Crafts, I don't even know what they come with. I don't think anyone does, but they're just factory standards. Personally, I'm of the opinion, just sell your lures without hooks. I guess there's a few other issues that come with that, but me and Mitch always upgrade them. So Mitch, you love owner ST36s, don't you?
Yep, so owner ST36s, owner ST11s, Deco YS25s, and now I've just been using a fair few of the BKK Fangs too, so.
Yeah. That's short and sweet. That's good.
It really, really depends on what lure. And generally, and I think Dill would agree with me here, is if you're using like a sort of heavier gauge hook, it pays to use the most similar hook you can to the original hook in terms of weight, because that's going to maintain the intended action that the company made for that lure. So really, really try. Yeah, really, really try. And if in doubt, I always tend to, even if that's what you have to do, I always tend to put slightly bigger hooks on the, say for a hard body, I always put a slightly bigger hook on the front set of hooks than the rear. It just tends to make the action better if that's what you have to go down, but really, really, really try and make the hook selection as close as you can to the original hooks you came on, especially for our beloved bent minnows.
Absolutely. So for reference, normally bent minnows come with a size 10 hook. Their own brand, I'm pretty sure it is. Now they're reasonable hooks. I'll normally run them out of the packet two or three fish, but then they normally blunt very quickly. I'll go down a size with them once I replace them. I'll put owner ST36s on, but I'll normally go down from a size 10 to a 12. Now it looks a bit small, but I find hookup rates are no different. Some people like to put an assist hook on the front hook ring, but I reckon that really throws the action out because it just catches a lot of drag, personally. What about you, Mitch? Have you tried assists on them?
I have. I just don't like the look of it. I know that heaps of people do it, so it obviously works. I guess the other thing is if you're using, say, the ZX assist hooks from Eco Gear, they've got the rubber skirt parts to them, so they kind of look a bit different. But, yeah, I think it ruins the actions in terms of hooks for, bent minnows. And we could talk about every single lure and what specific hooks to use. And if you're interested, send us a message about your lures and what hooks you think we might put on them, and we'll give you some information. But when it comes to the OSP bent minnow, I am running, I think it's size 10 BKK Fangs, because they really are similar. Yeah, they're a light hook and they're really quite similar to the original hooks, but they are far stronger and they are far sharper. So, if you can, just out of the pack. And they're quite cheap. They're actually really well-priced hook too. So, BKK makes some great stuff. But, yeah, they're sick. So, that's what I run on them.
And, So I guess that sums the hooks part up. Like, obviously, if you see a hook with a rounded point, if it gets a bit rusty, if it's damaged in any way, ditch it and put in a new one. Like, you've traveled, you've probably spent all your pay on a tank of fuel to get there. You've paid for your accommodation to go somewhere. Or let's think, if you even gone on a day trip, it's a whole day's time. One fish might make your trip. Put good hooks on for 50 cents or a dollar it costs to travel. Just change it. You will not regret it. I guess, like, moving on from hooks, I guess another really, really cool point and tip. I toyed with not even giving it away, but I will because I'm not. When you are fishing, for brim in particular, in high-pressured systems, sit as far off those fish as you can. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen people out on the water or in videos in systems I fish a lot and always go welly. And they'll be right near the structure, drifting past it, or standing up right near it, or just walking over a jetty. For God's sake, just keep your distance, take your time in your approach, and cast from a long way first up. You will find your catch rate skyrockets because you are just not spooking those fish. And with that, learn your line management. Like, it becomes a lot more technical in just getting the belly out of your line and presenting that lure properly. But at the end of the day, it's going to catch your fish. And I'm sure you found that too, Mitch, with your fly fishing too.
Yep. The more distance you can keep between yourself and the fish, the better you are. So that means big casts, and that means also if you're going to big cast, it means like you can get technical in terms of gear as well, so longer rods and stuff. But just pumping out the biggest casts you can possibly get, longer leaders, it just makes life a hell of a lot easier.
Once you've got your line management down and you do a pinpoint accurate casts with distance and you've learnt to manage even little things like your shadow, which amazes me, people don't pay attention to.
Yeah.
Your catch rate just skyrockets because it's just thinking about all those stealthy little things and watch how the fish behave when you do get closer. Like, sometimes I just go in to see what the fish do. Some days, sure enough, they do not care. Other days, it's everything. It can be the difference between catching 10 fish or 2 fish.
Yeah. And so we've talked about hooks and stuff, hard bodies. When it comes to jig heads, and we'll talk about this in the very next topic in a second, you want the sharpest hooks, you want the sharpest jig heads you can possibly find. Dill, what brands have you been using? What do you reckon about, like, in terms of, like, hooks?
I've tried a lot. I could slander a lot, but I'll just tell you what I like. So my number one with this is brim in particular. Let's just make that very clear. Definitely Gamakatsu round 25s, razor sharp hook and ridiculously strong, to the point I've even been running them for my super light jig heads for snapper to 3, 2, 3, 4 kilos, even a little bit bigger, and they hold up. They are bulletproof jig heads. Now, they're not the cheapest heads on the market, but they just last compared to anything else. You just never bend them out. Strong hooks, they don't round their points. Of note, the other head I really, really like is the TT headlocks, but in a light gauge. Personally, I cannot stand the heavy gauge ones. I just find the wire on them is just too thick for how I personally fish. Now, a lot of guys are going to disagree with that, but just personal preference. You'll find the light gauge just slips into the fish's mouth, gets through the hard bony teeth on the brim, works well. You do have to be a little bit careful. I have had quite a few of them bend out, but that's totally due to angler error. Just take your time. I like more fishing them in conjunction with a light leader, but they are very good heads at the end of the day.
Yep. And one thing that can help you is painting your jig head. So you can now buy a stack, a huge range of powder coating, like powder coats, paints for your jig heads. And it just changes it completely. So, like, normally you buy a jig head straight out of the pack. They're bright, shiny, silver things. In some circumstances, they can be really good things to attract fish. But on the opposite side of things, on a really, really tough day's fishing, if your jig heads are stock, shiny, bright silver, that can be the thing that shuts, like, that turns that fish off and goes from, like, by possibility of, like, hooking a fish to just, yeah, completely ignoring your, like, your soft plastic in, like, yeah, completely ignoring your soft plastic. I know that Dill paints a lot of his, like, a lot of his, like, probably, I don't know, do you paint all of them?
All.
Yeah, so,
and,
yeah.
Like, at first, I thought it was a bit of a gimmick, but, like anything, I always say, even if you think it's a gimmick and even if you rag on it and rag on all your mates who do it, just give it a shot because sometimes it works. Like, I got onto it, I think, from I think it was Charlie Sakeo put me onto it, actually. And we were trying a few different colours. I don't tend to think colour makes all the difference, but just dulling it down and sometimes even having just a bit of a really, like a really dark head with a contrasting fleck. Like I've got a few different shades of purple or a few different shades of brown with a bit of fleck, like whether it's the dark green with red fleck or a brown with blue fleck. It's just catches the eye of the fish, but without making it spook on a really quiet day. But more than anything, it just means you can sort of match the hatch to your plastic. Like you can get motor oil paint and put it on a motor oil plastic, and it just improves that profile so much more. And like there's a few little secret color mixes you can do that are incredibly good. Like you can really match it down to specific bait fish or food sources. And if you can play around with in your local estuaries, you will find some colors, some days will literally double or triple your catch rate. Bloody handy.
And painting jig head, it's not a new thing, but it is a really good thing to do in your brim fishing world. And it's sort of a thing that's been, I would say its lineage has probably come from fly fishing, because a lot of people out there in the fly fishing world say when they get fishing for trout and they're using things like woolly buggers or magoos and stuff, you buy like orange bead heads, like bright orange bead heads, shellfish bead heads, like all these different crazy colored bead heads, and like on the same color, like olive or black BMS or something, and it just changes that profile a little bit, and it's exactly the same thing. You can do the same thing for your jig heads as you do for your flies. So changing the color of your beads, jigs, whatever, it works really, 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 really well.
Yes. So we're sort of getting to the pointy end of the podcast now, but I'd say pretty much everyone always asks, I guess, when you meet someone new or you start fishing, like, what's your biggest brim? So I'll keep it short and sweet again. But I remember a session we had together when Mitch got his PB, and that was a very cool one, wasn't it, Mitchell?
Oh,
what?
So, Dylan, was it not cool?
I will paint the scene. I remember I had the day off of uni while we were living down in Warrnambool, and I was like, well, what am I going to do? Of course, I'm going to go fishing, aren't I? What else would you do on a day off? So I hit the water at probably about 9 in the morning, feeling rather groggy, but content with a good day on the water. So paddled up to a rock bank I'd never really had any success on, fired out a cast, got belted, pulled in a good, I think it was a really big estuary perch. And I was like, oh, cool. I haven't caught a perch this big in the Hopkins. That's really cool. All right. Dehooked it, got a few photos, threw it back, threw another cast in, got clunked again, massive brim. And then this sort of was a continuous cycle for quite a while. And I'm like, cool. All right. This is going off. And I was like, oh, better call Mitch. And I'm like, Mitch, get down here. And so where were you at the time, Mitch?
I had just finished playing twos for Deakin Sharks down in Warrnambool. So we were playing against Allensford, and we got absolutely pumped, absolutely smoked in the footy field. So Dill gave me a call, and he's like, the fishing's going off its head. You should come down here. And he said, and I mean for verbatim, he said, you will catch your PB brim. Because I don't know.
So I probably talked down that session a bit. Like, when I mean it was going off with like big fish to like a kilo and a half. Like every cast you're getting a fish, whether it be 600, 700 grams or like smacking over a kilo. Like these were, it was like one of those freak days where it's just on. Had to tell someone about it. Get someone a big fish.
Yeah, so Dill called me up, and I have just finished footy, and I was like, well, I wasn't down because, yeah, they are a good side, so we got smashed. But he messaged me, he's like, yep, come down. Fishing's all off its head. And I was like, oh, actually, I've got my kayak on the roof. So I was down there within about 10, 15 minutes tops. Like I was really, really close to where he was. And then probably half an hour later, I've paddled up around the corner to go spot Dill, waved out to him, had a bit of chat. And then he's like, fishing 1/12 jig head, 2.5-inch motor oil grub, S-Fact descent. And he's like, cast as close as you can, except not in the rocks. As close as you can to the rocks, let it sink down, twitch it back out, you're going to catch fish. So what did I do? I tied on a jig head, tied on my grub, S-factor, cast out. I think it was like one or two casts in, got a hit, missed it. I was like, what? What's happening here? A couple more times that happened. I was like, what's happening here? And this is going back to what we were talking about before, and using really quality jig heads. I wasn't using a quality jig head. Now, I'm not going to mention the brand, but I changed after that to another brand that was far, far sharper in my books and proceeded to smack 46 centimeter brim first cast, got my PB brim, still stacked up my PB brim today. It's not quite where I'd want it to be in terms of PB fish, but yeah, awesome fish. And then I think, yeah, we kept smacking fish for basically until it went dark. Like, and I'm not talking like huge, we're not talking huge numbers of fish, are we, Dill? Like,
no, it's just monsters. Like, you get a lot of small fish in between, but then the amount of like mid 40s to high 40s, like, we ended up at, by the end of the day, we had 7.23 kilos for our best five together. And then I had one of those fish that went two, yeah, it was bang on 2 kilos. The heaviest brim I've ever caught by a mile. Yep. Absolute tank.
And I think the numbers stacked up, it was 2 46s, a couple of 44s, multiple 42s, and a few others over 40, and then heaps, like probably another 15, 20 fish in that, like, really high 30s as well. So we probably, like, all up for the day, I reckon. Like, and that's just while I was there. Dill obviously was braining fish beforehand too, but the biggest fish definitely came in that afternoon period too, which is awesome. So
I'm now the fattest fish I've ever seen it. Like, some of the fattest fish. It was the time of the year just before the flows hit, and they'd been feeding up and getting ready to spawn. Like, we had a fish that went, I think it was like 38 centimeters and a kilo that day. It was that fat.
Oh.
Like, they just... I've never seen them like that since. And that, yeah, the 2 kilo fish we got was just, we'll get a photo of it. It was like a footy. I've never seen a brim like it. It's the deepest bodied thing ever.
Yeah.
Just so, out of proportion.
So I'm going to say that's my most memorable session. And I...
Yeah, it'd have to be.
Yeah. We're going to quickly jump through favorite locations. Obviously for me, Hopkins, I love it. Really mixed variety of fish. In terms of species, but also it's got a mixed size of brim all the way up to, like Dill and I were just talking about, some really, really, really solid fish. I think Luke Jerkovich last year got a 50, the lucky man. So, like, there's some seriously like good fish in there. So I'd say Hopkins is my favorite, really like the Glenelg too. And then there's a stack of smaller systems in between. And obviously down like the Great Ocean Road too, they're really good. You just go and explore. That's a Google Maps job for you. What do you like, Dill?
I'll always have a close heart, spot in my heart for the little surf coast systems, like you mentioned on the Great Ocean Road. Like, that was where my biggest ever brim came from. That was 48 centimeters from a hectic little session, but I don't know, they're very fickle. So they wouldn't be my all time go-tos. Like, if I had to fish one system for the rest of my life, it'd either be Gippy Lakes or Bem purely. I think Bem's just great when you want to catch a heap of fish, where Gippy Lakes, if you want to target your massive, massive fish and try for the biggest fish out there, it's definitely a goer. Awesome system. Like, it can be a bit tricky finding where they are sometimes, but once you find them, it's not uncommon to catch several kilo and a half fish in a session. Sometimes you can get much, much bigger ones, which are always welcome.
That just sounds unreal to me. I can't wait. I haven't done too much of that, so I'm excited.
Definitely. So...
All right.
So, we would like to talk about our recent sessions, wouldn't we, Mitch?
So hasn't
been too many of them.
So our recent sessions in the brim basically haven't existed. I don't know the last time I chased. I've tried to chase some brim in the salt water, in amongst chasing some snapper recently, but like those fish there, like if anyone has any tips for chasing full salty brim in high pressured systems, please. Please slide into our DMs and tell me about it. So I've been trying to catch them flies. I'm trying to get them on lures. It's just been doing my head in a little bit. So no results from there.
Lots of eye candy, but no reward.
Oh, and some really big fish too. They just suck. The water's crystal clear, like proper sight casting. They're just assholes. So they're my most recent sessions in terms of brim, but like, yeah, we haven't been able to move around the state fish. So brim has been far off my mind. Dill's been doing it probably more recently than I have. And he's been fully locked down for over six weeks now. So
nearly 6 months, mate.
Yeah, true. Nearly 6 months. How good's 2020?
Yeah. Well, at least cases are going down, so we'll be back out soon.
That's right. So
I don't know. At least we know lots of people, so we can sort of let you know how fishing has been around. Like, I'll start things off. Like, we've seen a lot of fish coming from the southwest estuaries at the minute. Lots of little systems, whether or right to your big ones, Hopkins and Glenelg, they're all fishing well. Just deep vibes, grubs, slim swims. Keep it simple. Find some deep holes. You'll catch fish. Not much more to it.
Yeah. In terms of sessions that we're hoping to do coming up, I'm really hoping to go with Dill to a couple of East Gippsland trips. He's talked it up too much not to go over there. And I'm also really excited for summer and fishing some metro systems. I really don't like Melbourne that much. I think a lot of people like be the same as me. I hate people. And obviously Melbourne's got a stack of them. So I just don't go.
Can confirm that.
Can confirm.
Couple.
Yeah, there's just a few million people in Melbourne, so I try and avoid it where best I possibly can. Nothing to do with the people. I just hate large volumes of people, and it translates the same thing into surfing as well. I don't like that either. So I try and avoid Melbourne, but Dill has really sold me on doing some sessions over in some of the metro waterways over there. So I'm really excited about that. And then obviously I'm just excited to head back down west as well and go chase some fish in some of those systems over there and just honestly get away from Geelong, get away from my house, just get away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait, should I say, to just get 15 minutes, 20 minutes down the road, put in on one of the metro rivers and spank some fish off the edges. Like, this time of year, it starts warming up. Give it a few more months and... Oh, there's a lot of dumb brim in Melbourne patrolling the rock walls and pylons and pontoons and rubbish and whatever's floating down the river. And they're good fun and they're not the wisest critters in the world, but the big ones will give you a good learning time. But just get out and give it a shot. You'll catch a fair few fish if you are just getting into it. They're a great species to learn on around here locally. But you know what, Mitch? I think we've almost wrapped it up there.
I reckon we could, well, honestly, we could keep talking about brim for a long time. So, yeah, we could do that. But realistically, we've got a lot of other episodes that we're going to cover in terms of brim, specific trips, specific techniques that we have learned during those trips, and also more seasonal trip tactics as well. So we'll probably touch on some metro stuff later on down the track once it starts firing up again. And yeah. I think that does it for this. What do you reckon, Dill?
Yeah, I think that's a good wrap. We've probably bored you for long enough now, so I guess all we can say is if you haven't yet, get on our Instagram page. We'll be doing a few giveaways very soon. Well, I guess if you're listening to this episode, you've probably seen the launch of our podcast, so have a look at our most recent post and you might find there's a way you can win a little bit of gear.
But where can they find us? So obviously our Instagram is on the Cast Media. So that's the best place to get in contact with us, see what we're up to, see what we're doing. We'll probably talk about all the releases of our podcast. When we're releasing those podcasts. So check us out on Instagram. We don't have Facebook yet. We might get it one day. I don't really like Facebook. Dill doesn't like Facebook, so we'll see how we go. If you want us to get Facebook and you want us to share some stuff on Facebook, let us know. And we'll get that up. It's just another thing to look after. But yeah, subscribe to the podcast. I think we're on most things, Dill.
I think we're just waiting for a few more to get approved, but I'd say by the time this is up, we should be out everywhere. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And if
you're not, we can definitely find us on Spotify. If you're listening to this, you probably have found us on Spotify, one of its other mediums.
and if you like this content and you like our podcast, screenshot it, put it up on your Instagram, tag us in it, and we'll send that out to the masses as well. We really appreciate it. Give us all the feedback that you can give us. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us what you do like. Tell us what you want to see. That's what we want to know.
Yeah, and as always, if you've got any questions, just send them through to us. We'll have all the details in the description, or failing that, you know what, Instagram, we're always on it.
So yeah.
We can answer straight away, or we might even do a few listener questions soon enough. But I guess that's a pretty good wrap-up there, Mitchell.
I reckon.
Covered everything we can with Brim.
Everything with Brim for now in the time we had available. So plenty more to come in our brim file series.
Exactly. But I think what's next? We've got some snapper in the next podcast.
Now we have some snapper. Well, yeah, we have some snapper coming up. With
a very special guest. So
he is indeed.
He's a bit more qualified on the snapper than we are.
He is indeed very, very special.
Ricky is a snapper.
All right, we're waffling on. We'll catch you later in the next episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Let us know.
Bye.
I'll catch you later, Dill.
Catch you, Mitchell.
See you, Mike.